Okay. So top level of analysis. Okay. So why don't we say because it's volatile and flammable. So the point is, in other words, you're going to light a lamp of sodi in your house, and your house is easily going to catch on fire. So first of all, Tosfos says that would be reason enough to make it also on weekdays as well. And second of all, even fine, you're going to say, okay, you know, you want to take the chance on weekdays. Anyway, it should be also on Shabbat for the point, because if things start catching on fire, you're liable to forget that it's Shabbos and be in a panic to save your stuff and put out the fire. So that should be reason enough, says Abaye, to say that it should be also to use sorry. And you're right, the Gemara says, Choder va'od kama. In fact, Zava is giving a reason plus another reason. Choder mepnei shehu af. He's saying, number one, this balsam oil, this sorry, is very flammable. Number two, and also on top of that, you have a gzera, the chachamim are making a gzera because you might start using some of it. The ritva explains, in other words, even if let's say you mix it with something else, so that way it won't be quite so volatile. So you don't have the problem of danger, and you don't have the problem that the house might burn down. But even then, you have the other problem, which is that it's fragrant, and so you might take some of it on Shabbos. So in this connection, the Gemara tells a story to show how volatile and dangerous sorry is. Ahi Chamsa, there was a certain mother-in-law, to have a sneal of a kalsa. She hated her daughter-in-law. Omrullah, so one day she tells her, Zil ikashit b'mishcha da'farsima, go perfume yourself with balsam oil. Ozla ikashit, so the daughter-in-law went and did that and perfumed herself with this oil. She asked us when she came back, Omrullah, her mother-in-law told her, Zil itli shraga, go light the lamp. Now we know from the Gemara we just learned that it's very volatile stuff and it easily catches on fire. But the daughter-in-law didn't realize. Ozla itla shraga, she went and lit the lamp, in pachbanura, and the fire caught a hold of her, v'achalta, and burned her. So we see how dangerous sorry is, and therefore that's what we were saying, that it's volatile, and therefore it's not something that you should be using for Shabbos candles, or again, as Tosfos says, really, you shouldn't even be using it on weekdays as well. What's the nimshal of the story, by the way? Why is the Gemara mentioning the story about a mother-in-law who harmed her daughter-in-law with this? So Pesher Agadja says, and I saw quoted from a cook somewhat similarly, that it's a mashal for what the Yetzirah does to a person. The Yetzirah tries to convince a person to do such and such, and you think that he's your friend, not realizing you should realize, wait a minute, a mother-in-law never likes her daughter-in-law. It's almost a fact of life. What is she giving me advice for? It must be that it's to my detriment. If the daughter-in-law in this story had realized that, she would have been safe. And the same thing, if a person realizes that the Yetzirah, or Rav Kook says, for example, people in the outside world who try to get you to dress yourself and decorate yourself the way the goyim do, for example, if you realize that they don't have your benefit in mind, then you'll be much better off. In this connection also, the Gemara mentions another short piece of Agadah. And talking about sorry and the importance of it, we said that it's fragrant. We said that it's very fragrant oil. The pasuk describes after Nebuchadnezzar and his army destroyed the Beit Mikdash and destroyed Yerushalayim and took most of the Jewish people into Golos. The pasuk says, "Umidala sa'oras hishir Nebuchadnezzar nuzaradan rav tabachin." From the poorest people of the land, the Buzaradan, the chief butcher, left over l'kermim u'l'yoydim. He left them over for kermim and yoydim. Now, the simple meaning of kermim and yoydim means people who take care of vineyards and of wine presses. But the Chassam Sofer points out that Gemara is bothered by that can't be the actual meaning over here, because anybody can take care of vineyards, not anybody, whatever. You can find people all over the place who can take care of vineyards and who can take care of wine presses. So why would Nebuzaradan have to have left people behind specifically for that purpose? He could have taken everybody into Golos and then brought people from other lands, like Sancheira did 100 years earlier, to repopulate out Israel and take care of the vineyards. So therefore the Gemara wants to say that we must be talking about certain industries that were Eretz Yisrael's specialty, and you couldn't find people anywhere else who would know how to do them, and therefore Nebuzaradan had to leave some people behind to take care of them. These are the people, by the way, who Gedaliah was in charge of them, and then when Gedaliah was assassinated, then they all got frightened, and they ended up leaving and moving to Mitzrayim, even though Yirmiyahu told them not to. Anyway, so what does Kerman mean? So what does Kerman and what does Yoga mean? Kerman Tani Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef teaches a braisa that Kerman means Elam Alakte Afar Simon Ne'en Gedi Vad Romsa. These are the people who collect Afar Simon and then collect the oil from it from En Gedi until Romsa. Kerman, Rashi explains, besides that it means vineyards, can also be related to a word that means to gather. So therefore, the Gemara is explaining that the Kerman over here are people who gather Afar Simon.
And Afar Simon is what in English?
Is balsam. Is balsam. So they gather balsam, they gather the oil from the trees. And yogvim, when the Pasuk mentions that he left over also yogvim, so the word yogvim in the simple sense means people who deal with wine presses. But elus sayode chilozen misalomis shall serve ad chaifa. These are the people who trap chilozen to make chilos from it from the heights of Tsur, nowadays it's the area called Rosh HaNikra, the north tip of Eretz Yisrael, until Haifa, so along that part of the Mediterranean coast, is where you catch and process the chilozen. The point is that to get the chilas out, the chilas is the blood of the chilozen, and to get it out, you have to squeeze the chilozen, so therefore it's similar to squeezing grapes to get wine. So the point is, therefore, that Nebuchadnezzar left these people in Eretz Yisrael, the people who collect the farsimon and the people who process chilozen, in order to have that they should be able to produce fragrances and dyes for Nebuchadnezzar. So again, we see how important these things were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Getting back now to things that you're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles, turn it up on them. Ein madlikin b'tevel tomei b'chol. You're not allowed to light a lamp with tevel, which is tomei, on weekdays, because since it's tevel, you didn't take truma and nicer from it. It's also for you to use in a way where you're destroying it. So even on weekdays, the ein sarach loyim of the Shabbos. Needless to say that you can't do that on Shabbos. Now Rashi learns that it means when we're saying that you're not allowed to use tevel tomei, means all the more so you're not allowed to use tevel tomer. Rashi says that once we're saying that you're not allowed to use tevel tomei, even though it's tomei, and on the face of it, there's nothing else you can do with it. As it is, when you take the truma and maisa out of it, it's anyway going to be truma and maisa, which is tomei, and truma, as we learned yesterday, all the kohen can do with it is burn it, and maisa sheni is going to be also altogether because it's tomei. So therefore, so Rashi learns that it's a kavachomer, that is a kosher game. If you're not allowed to use tevel tomei, you're definitely not allowed to use tevel tomei. Tosfos disagrees with that, says it's not a kosher game. Tosfos just says once we're saying that you're not allowed to use tevel tomei, then automatically also then together with that also you're not allowed to use tevel tomei. And then you have Rishonim, you have the Rashba and some other Rishonim learn that actually you are in fact allowed to use tevel tahar to light a fire, and it's only tevel tomei as we're discussing here in the Gemara that would be also. Okay, anyway, the point is that the Gemara is saying you're not allowed to use tevel tomei on weekdays and certainly not on Shabbos. By the way, the Rashba asks the question, what's the certainly not? I mean, once we say you're not allowed to on weekday, why is it certainly not on Shabbos? What is there extra on Shabbos that you can't on weekdays? So there's a few reasons. One possibility is because, again, we say it's one way of looking at it is maybe it's a mitzvah to burn it, the same way as it's a mitzvah to burn Truma Tmei, as we discussed yesterday. So you have the same problem as we discussed yesterday that you might tilt the lamp, or the other day, that you might tilt it in order to make it burn faster. Anyway, so you're not allowed to use tevel tomei for Shabbos candles. You're not even allowed to use it for weekday candles. Similarly, continues the Braisa, you're not allowed to light Shabbos candles with white neft on weekdays, v'ein tzarech loyim b'Shabbos, and needless to say on Shabbos. So we learned in the Mishnah, we mentioned neft is also like itron, it's a byproduct of tar or pitch or whatever. So you have, you refine it or you distill it or whatever, and you get the sort of like nowadays when you have this petroleum, for example, you know, they get petroleum out of the ground and then they make various things out of it. You get out of it gasoline and kerosene and diesel fuel and so on and so forth. So the same way with pitch from trees, you have the original pitch and then you process and distill it in various ways, and you get itron that we mentioned in the Mishnah and neft that we're mentioning over here. So neft is a liquid, and you have two different forms of it, which is one of them the Gemara is mentioning over here. Neft lavan is white or clear neft, which is particularly volatile, like we were saying before about sodium. It evaporates very easily, and therefore it's very flammable. So we're saying you're not allowed to light with neft lavan, even on weekdays, needless to say on Shabbos.
And neft is from trees also?
It's some kind of byproduct of pitch from pine trees or whatever. So you tap the tree or whatever to get pitch from it, and then you process the pitch. And then we said at the beginning of the paragraph that you have the psoilus of it, where you have leftover in the container after you take out the good stuff. It's called itron. And then you also have another way of processing it. You can get out of it, you distill out of it or whatever you get, and you get neft. You get neft lovin. You get this clear white liquid, which is very volatile and flammable.
And that's only from pine trees?
So I suppose in those days they could also get it from petroleum, but I mean it wasn't, you know, they weren't digging oil wells in those days. You have a few places in the world where you have natural petroleum, seeps. I suppose they could get neft out of that also. But basically neft, you can think of neft, I guess, as kind of like kerosene or turpentine or something. Yeah, you can get it from different sources.
Mm-hmm.
So the verse says, Bishlem and Neflavan, I can understand why you can't use Neflavan, but they show off, because as we said before, it's volatile and therefore it's dangerous. So you shouldn't use it on weekdays because it's dangerous, and certainly you shouldn't be using it on Shabbos, because the Tosfos says you might end up putting out the fire to save your house. Abel Tevel Tomei my timer, but the Braita is also saying you're not allowed to light the lamp even on weekdays with Tevel Tomei. Why? Why is that? The reason is Omakra, because the Pasuk says, Va'ani hine nesafu lecha et mishmeres trumoisai. The Pasuk says, Hashem tells Aaron, I am giving you the guarding of my trumois, in the plural. And as we said yesterday, b'shtei trumos hakotim v'daber, by saying trumoisai, my trumois, in the plural, we're talking about two kinds of truma. One of them is truma, which is tahor. One of them is truma, which is tameh. And so yesterday we used that to say that was one of the sources. We said that just like a Kohen is allowed to have hanah from truma tahor by eating it, so also he's allowed to have hanah from truma tameh when he burns it. Now we're taking that in a bit of a different way. Ma truma tahor ein lecha ba ela mishas haroma ve'elach. Just like truma tahor, the Kohen is only allowed to use it or how to eat it once it was actually taken out. We don't say, in other words, that a Kohen is allowed to eat tevel because the truma is mixed in there and he's allowed to eat truma. He has to wait until the truma is actually separated out and only then he can eat it. So just like that, the same thing when it goes to truma tmeya, he has to wait until it's actually taken out. True, that the tevel is going to be tameh. Because it's true that the tevel is tameh, and therefore the truma that's taken out of it is going to be tameh. And the only thing you can do with truma tmeya, as we said yesterday, is burn it. Or, okay, according to Rashi, you can destroy it in other ways and have hanah from it. Whatever, the point remains. The point remains, you have to wait until it's taken out. Until then, it's tevel, and you're not allowed to use it in a way that's going to destroy it.
But what's the purpose of taking truma on something that's tummy? What's the meaning?
That's the point. You'll give it to the Kohen, and now the Kohen has something that he can use for firewood. That's exactly the point. He's going to use it for something. Now he's able to use it for. He can't eat it, but he can use it for other purposes. According to Tosfos, he has to burn it. According to Rashi, quoted Rashi, explained Rashi to be saying that you're allowed to use it in other destructive ways also. For example, actually, you have a Gemara in Sochem, for example, that talks about, for example, hypothetically, you could use it if it was wine, for example, which you can't burn. The Gemara discusses over there the possibilities whether you're allowed to sprinkle it around your house to make a nice smell in the house, as they used to do in those days, like an air freshener kind of. Or, for example, according to Tosfos' understanding of Rashi, you'd be able to feed it to an animal, etc. The point is that the Kohen has some use out of it. But nevertheless, not until it's actually separated out. Until then, it's tevel, and you can't use it for what's called hanal shel kilui, a hanal that involves destroying it. Tosfos mentions over here that it's not that tevel is also the hanal per se, it's also in a hanal of kilui. It's also in a hanal that is going to destroy it, like here where you're burning it. Again, you have a Macholik that's Rishonim, you have Rashi and Tosfos saying that it's also to do that with Tevel, which is Tahar, and then you have the Rashba and some other Rishonim who say that it is actually allowed. The Shach in Hilchus Trumas in Yerideah passed things like Rashi and Tosfos over here that it's also. Okay. Gufa. Getting back to what we said before, we said Rav Shimon Elazar Omer Einad Likin B'Sari. We said that Rav Shimon Elazar had said before at the beginning that you're not allowed to use Sari for lighting balsam oil for lighting Shabbos candles. V'chein Hoyer Rav Shimon Elazar Omer. Rav Shimon Elazar also said another reason, another point. He also said another point. Sari Eina Elas Sraf Me'Aseh Tosh. Like we say every morning in Davin, sorry, you should know, is a sack that comes from the path trees. So what's the point of that? Rashi says two explanations. Number one is like this. We had already two reasons why not to use sorry. Number one, because it's expensive and fragrant stuff, so you might take some of it on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to. You might take some of it out of the lamp. Number two, we said because it's very volatile and flammable, and therefore it's dangerous. Now Rav Shimon Elazar is giving a third reason. Because it's not, Rav Shimon Elazar holds, as we're going to say soon, that you're only, he holds, like the next Tana that we're going to quote, that for Shabbos candles, you're only allowed to use an oil that comes from a fruit. And over here, it doesn't come from a fruit. It comes from the actual wood. So therefore, now, we learned at the beginning of the parak that we have the various kinds of fuels and oils that you're not allowed to use because they don't burn well, they don't get drawn up into the wick. So according to that, the Shimon Elazar is saying, you should know, the same thing is true as far as balsam oil. It's a sap that comes from a tree, and therefore it doesn't get drawn up well into the wick, and that would be another reason why not to use it for Shabbos candles. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is it has nothing to do. Rav Shimon Elazar is not giving a reason for his din before. He's just saying, by the way, you should know, what is sari? It is a sap that comes from the kaf tree.
Okay. Sraf is what?
Sraf means a sap.
A sap.
A liquid that comes out of the trees, yeah.
Okay.
So that's Rav Shimon Elazar. Rabbi Shmuel, I'm a kol ha-yotim in a-eitz in Madlikin, though. Rabbi Shmuel says anything that comes from wood, you're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles. So he would say that. So he would say, for example. So we said in the Mishnah, he says you're not allowed to use itron, which we said over there was actually. He said it was because of covered Shabbos that it smells bad. Tosfos actually asks in that case. Then why over here? He's saying anyway over here you can't use anything that comes from a tree, which automatically implies itron because itron comes from trees. So that should be reason enough. Why did he have to mention in the Mishnah because of covered Shabbos? Anyway, but that's what he's saying is that anything that comes from a tree, any sap that comes from a tree, you're not allowed to use Shabbos candles. Okay. Rabbi Shmuel, so he would say you could use things that, he would say that you could use, of course, you could use fruit oils, like, for example, definitely no question you can use olive oil, let's say, but he would also say, let's say, for example, that you could use fish oil or mineral oil or whatever. He would just say that you can't use oils that come from trees because he's saying they don't burn well. So that's the second opinion. A third opinion, Rabbi Shmuel ben Broka, and the Ein Mikin El Abiyotim and Apri. Rabbi Shmuel ben Broka says you can only use for Shabbos candles something that comes from the fruit. So according to him, not only you can't use, like Rabbi Shmuel was saying, things that come from trees, like the sap of trees, he would say that also you can't use, for example, fish oil or whatever. So then when we said before, according to Rashi's first explanation of Rav Shimon Elazar, he's saying basically the same thing as Rav Shmuel and Rav Shmuel ben Berakhia, so that because it comes from the staff of a tree, there's a tzari, therefore you can't use it. So that was Rashi's first explanation. Okay. So then we have a fourth opinion, Rav Tarfon Omer. Rav Tarfon says, this we have in the Mishnah, Rav Tarfon says, you can only use olive oil for Shabbos candles. Omer Rav Yechon ben Nuri al Raglav, so Rav Yechon ben Nuri in response got up on his feet, and he says, how could you say that? How can you say you can only use olive oil for Shabbos candles? Ma yasu anshe bavel. In that case, what are the people of Bavel supposed to do? She'en lahem el Hashem and shoshamin. All they have in Bavel is sesame oil. You're saying they shouldn't light Shabbos candles. Ma yasu anshe modai. What should the people of modai do? She'en lahem el Hashem and egozin. They only have oil made from nuts. Ma yasu anshe Alexandria. She'en lahem el Hashem and snonis. What should the people of Alexandria do, where they only have oil from radishes? And what should the people of Kaputkia do, which is a place now in Turkey nowadays? They don't have any of the above. The only thing they have over there is neft. So how could you say, Rav Tarfon, that you can only use olive oil? What are people in these places supposed to use for Shabbos candles? Rav Yechon ben Nuri says, no, the only you have a list in the first Mishnah in our Perek of things that the Chachamim said you can't use for Shabbos candles, and that's it. Don't start adding to that list. Don't start saying that you can't use anything other than olive oil. Now, it isn't true all the Chachamim agree it is best to use olive oil if you have it, because, as we said the other day, it burns the clearest, it gives the clearest flame, but Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri is telling us you are, in fact, allowed to use other oils if that's all you have.
Okay. Maybe he meant in Eretz Yisrael only.
Maybe, but maybe, whatever it is. The point is that Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri is saying you certainly can't say that that's a din. You certainly can't say that that's a din for all over the world. Okay. And he continues, umavlikin b'shemen dogim over itran. You should know, you're allowed to light with oil from fish, and you're allowed to light with itran. So itran, we had in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel had said, you're not allowed to use because it's covered Shabbos, so it smells bad. But he's saying, Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri is saying, no, you can use itran if that's all you have. And you can use shemen dogim. Rashi says, even though shemen dogim is similar to chaylev, and we learned at the beginning of the parak that chaylev you're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles because it doesn't burn clearly, but shemen dogim you are allowed to use. Okay. Reb Shimon Shazuri, another opinion, Reb Shimon Shazuri says, madlikin b'shemen pakuos over neft. You are allowed to light Shabbos candles with oil from pakuos, which we learned in the Mishnah is some kind of plant, is a plant in the melon family. It's a kind of bitter melon. You get the it has seeds that contain a lot of oil. So you are allowed to light with oil from pakuos over neft, and you are also allowed to light with neft. Now, what is Rav Shimon Shazuri adding to what we just said? If we just said that you're allowed to, if Rav Yechon ben Nuri is saying you're allowed to light with anything, then what is he adding by mentioning shemen pakuos and neft? So actually, you have Tosfos over here brings a girsa that maybe it should be the other way around. Maybe Rav Shimon Shazuri is saying ain't licking the shemen pakuos of the neft, that you're not allowed to. So therefore, he would be saying, fine, I agree with you mostly, Rav Yechon ben Nuri, I agree with most of your list, but I would say, besides for the ones that we learned in the first Mishnah of our parish, besides that, also you're not allowed to light with shemen pakuos or neft. There's a Tosfos elsewhere, and also the Ritva over here, who says the other way around. Rav Shimon Shazuri would be disagreeing with all the other opinions and saying those are the only two you could use, meaning, of course, you could use olive oil, but among the various lesser oils, he says the only ones that you can use, according to that way of understanding, would be shemen pakuos and neft. Okay. Another
shemen pakuos is what causes
it? Pakuos are a plant in the melon family. It's a plant that produces melons that have a very bitter taste, but they also have seeds that contain a lot of oil, and they would use them in those days as a source of oil. So again,
why called pakuos?
They're called pakuos, literally means like round things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's a story, by the way, that the pasuk tells us a story in Malachim Beis, where at one point during a famine, one time Elisha's students go out to gather wild vegetables to make a soup or something, and one of them accidentally brings back something poisonous, and then they discover in the middle of the meal, wait a minute, we're eating something poisonous, and they ask Elisha what to do, and Elisha puts in some flour into the pot, and a nest happened, and everything became edible. So what was that plant? What was that dangerous plant that they put in? So the Radak over there mentioned that it might be the pakuras of our Gemara over here, which are very bitter and maybe even poisonous. I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Another opinion. Sumchusa in the Kolayotim. And Abbaso ain't madlikin by El Bashem and Dagim. Sumchus says, here's a general rule. Anything that comes from flesh, any oil that comes from flesh, you're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles except for oil from fish. So, for example, he would say you can't use chaylev, for example, which comes from flesh. Now, the question is, sumchus hayno tana kama? Isn't sumchus saying exactly the same thing as Rav Yechon ben Nuri? Rav Yechon ben Nuri has said that all you various tanoim are bringing lists of things that you say are author. I say that no, only the ones that are listed in the first Mishnah of our parak are author. Now, in that list, you have chaylev. So therefore, chaylev is automatically author. And on the other hand, we said shemen dogim is mutter. So what does sumchus add into that? The answer is ikim b'nav, Rav Baruna omar Rav. The difference between them would be regarding what Rav Baruna said in the name of Rav at the beginning of the parak. We said that he had said that kirve dogim, that melted down fish gut, or chaylev, he said, chaylev mahutach, chaylev that had previously been melted, rendered down. Rav Bruna has said, you put in a little bit of oil into them, a little bit of olive oil or regular oil or whatever, and then you can use them for Shabbos candles. So therefore, Rashi says, what it is between the Tanakhama, between Rav Yechon and Nuri and Sumchus, one of them would say that chaylev, you're allowed to do like that. You're allowed to mix in a little oil with chaylev and use it. And as far as fish oil, you don't need to mix in anything. And the other one would be saying, between Rav Yechon and Nuri and Sumchus, the other one would be saying that you're allowed to use fish oil if you mix in a little regular oil, but you're not allowed to use chaylev at all. The loim is tiny, but it's not clear from the description which one holds which. So we know one of them holds one way and the other one holds the other way, but we're not real clear which one is which. Tosfos says that's not what it means, because usually whenever we have in the Gemara ikabinayu such and such, ikabinayu did a Baruna Amadav, for example, it means that one of them completely holds like him and the other one does not. According to Rashi's explanation, it comes out that neither one of them agrees exactly with Rav Baruna, because Rav Baruna had said that both fish oil and chaylev, you can put in a little bit of oil, you could put chaylev that was melted, you can put in a little bit of oil and light it. And according to Rashi's explanation, it comes out neither one of them says exactly like that. One of them would be saying that fish oil, you need a little extra oil in it, and chaylev you can't use at all. And the other one would be saying chaylev you can add a little oil, and fish oil you don't need to. So it comes out neither one is saying exactly the same thing as Rav Baruna. So therefore Tosfos says that no. All this time we've discussed over the last couple of days that Rashi learns that shem and dogim means melted down fish guts, and there are various grounds on which Tosfos argues with Rashi on that. So here's another one. Shem and dogim over here does not mean melted down fish guts, which is what Bruno was talking about over there. It's rather oil that you get from the eye of the fish. And Tosfos mentions you have a Gemara in Baba Batra, in one of the stories of Rabba Baba Chana over there, where you have in one of the stories they mentioned a huge amount of oil that they got from the eye of a fish. So it's a mussel over there, it's fine, but still the point is that it's following how things are in real life, that a fish's eye contains oil. So therefore, so Tosfos says, our Gemara over here is talking about, so what we're saying is like this. We have, the Baruna would say that when it comes to fish guts, yes, you need to mix in a little bit of oil. When it comes to fish, when it comes to oil from the eye of the fish, though, then that burns well enough. That gets drawn up into the wick well enough that you don't have to add anything to it. So therefore, so now we would be saying between Sumchos and Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri, one of them holds completely like Rabbi Runa, that all you need to do with oil that comes with oil that comes from the flesh, meaning in other words, chalev or melted fish gut, is add a little bit of oil. The other one would be saying that you can't. So one of them agrees with the Barona and one of them does not. But we're not sure which one is which.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we're going to start a new discussion on the halachas of Tumah v'Tahara.
So the halacha is like the Chachamim.
The halacha is like the Stam Mishnah at the beginning of our parak, which is also like the Rav Yechon ben Nuri in our Braisa, that yes, you have, there's the specific ones that are mentioned in the Mishnah, that you're in the first Mishnah of our parak, that you're not allowed to use. Actually, the halacha is also accepted like Rabbi Shmuel, that you shouldn't use itron because it smells bad, and therefore you might leave the room, or you might leave the room, and then you're not going to enjoy the Shabbos candle. But everything else you're allowed to use.
If we're not allowed to use itron, how come some people use paraffin oil, which smells also very bad?
Paraffin oil doesn't smell that bad.
It doesn't smell good.
Okay, but it doesn't smell that. It's not so offensive that you'd leave the room. In fact, by the way, I mean, we've been talking about Yitzron, we've also been talking about neft. And by the way, the Gemara elsewhere talks about that neft does smell very bad also. So why are we saying that according to many Tanoim you're allowed to use it? The Tosfos mentions the idea that maybe, okay, neft smells bad, but not quite as bad as Yitzron. And the Ramban gives a different explanation. The Ramban says that neft only smells bad only when it's being moved around. So like, for example, the Gemara that mentions it smelling bad, it's talking about measuring it out. So you're pouring it out, then we said before, it's very volatile, so therefore it smells really bad. But when it's just sitting in place and burning, then it doesn't smell so bad. So maybe that's the same thing with your paraffin oil. It does smell bad when it's being moved around, but fine. When you're lighting Shabbos candles with it, you're not moving it around. You're leaving it in one place. Okay, does it have the most delicious smell? No, but it doesn't smell so bad that you would actually leave the room because of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you stabilize balsam oil,
we said before that's the ritva had explained that the reason why we need multiple reasons to say that you can't use balsam oil is because even if you stabilize it so it's not volatile, you still have Labba's problem that you might take some of it on Shabbos.
Because it doesn't burn well.
No, not because it doesn't burn well, but because it smells so good that you might want to take some for perfume or whatever.
Ah. I see.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So now we're going to start a new discussion on the halachas of Tumah v'Tahara. So what we have to realize, what we have to keep track of in this discussion is we're going to be talking about the minimum size of a piece of cloth that's able to become tameh. We have to realize, as we're going to go through the sugya, we're going to be talking about two different measurements. And the only way to tell the difference between them is Lashon Zachar and Lashon Nekeva. So this is one of those cases where Dikduk becomes kind of important. You have like this. We know there's of the different measurements that we use in halacha, there's an espa, which is the width of a thumb, which is Lashon Zachar. And you also, espa is Lashon Nekeva, rather. And then we have a tefach, which is Lashon Zachar, which is four etzbos. As we're going to discuss in the sugya over here, for certain purposes in halacha, we talk about shalosh al shalosh, which is in Lashon Nekeva, and then it refers to etzbos, three by three etzbos. And for certain purposes, we talk about shloisha al shloisha, which is Lashon Zachar, and that's going to refer to tefachim. So we're going to have to keep that straight as we go through this gemara over here. So just want to start that. Tanya, Rav Shim ben Elazar, Kol ha-yotzi min ha-eitz. Here's another rule. Before you mention a rule that anything that comes from a tree you're not allowed to use as fuel for the Shabbos candles. So now he's saying another rule also that has to do with things that come out of trees. Anything that's produced from trees or from plants. For example, Rashi says. For example, Rashi says hemp or cotton or whatever. Ein bo mishum shalosh al shalosh. First of all, the rule of shalosh al shalosh does not apply to it. A piece of cloth, a piece of cotton cloth, let's say, three by three etzbos is not metabol tumah, says Rav Shimon Elazar. Or mesakchin bo, and because it comes from a tree, you would actually be able to use it for tzach because it grows from the ground and it's not makabel truma and it's detached from the ground. Chutz mipishtan, with the exception of flax. Later on, we're going to discuss that flax is that flax linen is that linen is makabel. Is the Kabbal Tumah of the Goyim, of Taras, and even before it's completely processed, it's already the Kabbal Tumah. So therefore Rashi says, you would not be allowed to use unin, you would not be allowed to use bundles of combed flax for schach, because it's already been the Kabbal Tumah.
Why linen can the Kabbal Tumah and all the other byproducts of
So far we're not saying that the other ones can't be Mekabel Tumah. So far what we're saying is they can't be Mekabel Tumah in sizes of only 3x3 etzvos. So later on we're going to discuss about 3x3 tfachim. But right now we're dealing with 3x3 etzvos. Because we're going to learn soon, the Gemara is going to explain soon that you have a pasuk that implies that wool and linen are different than all other kinds of cloth. But the point is that therefore he's saying that pieces of other kinds of cloth other than linen and wool, as we'll discuss soon, are not makabel tumah when they're only 3x3 etzvos, and because, for example, cotton or hemp or whatever come from plant products, then you'd actually be allowed to use them for tzach. Tosfos actually discusses, it's not really so simple. What we'd be talking about, it would have to be specifically, Tosfos says, where you wove a piece of cloth that size and you intend to still make it larger. Because if you don't intend to make it larger, then already it is makabel tuma. Therefore, you can't use it for schach. So it's just from later on in Amos Sechta. And second of all, if it came from a larger garment and you ripped off a piece less than 3x3 etzvos, then it was already part of a garment which was makabel tuma, and again you couldn't use it for schach. So we have to be talking about, Tosfos says over here, that you wove a piece 3x3 etzvos, but you actually intend to make it larger. So therefore, it's not yet makabel tuma, and therefore Tosfos says you'd be able to use it for schach. Okay. With the exception of flax, with the exception of linen, where their 3x3 etzvos is already makabel tuma, and Rashi says you wouldn't even be able to use unin shel pishtan for schach. Rashi learns that unin means flax that hasn't even been spun yet. Tosfos later on discusses that it means flax that's been spun, but not actually woven yet. Okay. Anyway.
And schach is only a schach of sukkah?
Schach of sukkah, yeah.
Right.
Amr Abayas, Abayas says, Rav Shimon ben Elazar, v'tanan, v'ed avishmol, amru davar echad. It comes out, says Abayas, that Rav Shimon ben Elazar and v'tanan, v'ed avishmol, are both saying the same thing. Namely, this that we're going to learn now, that Tanit Vei Rabbi Shmuel says that there's a difference between wool and linen versus everything else. So therefore, where does Rav Shimon Elazar get this idea that other kinds of cloth should not be subject to Tumah, at least when a piece is only 3x3 etzvos? He gets that based on what Tanit Vei Rabbi Shmuel is going to say, that there's a difference between wool and linen versus everything else. Namely, Rav Shimon Elazar Hodambar, we just said what Rav Shimon Elazar says, that pieces of other kinds of cloth of 3x3 etzvos are not makabel tumah. And Tanit Vei Rabbi Shmuel, Mayhi, what does Tanit Vei Rabbi Shmuel say? Like this, the Tanit Vei Rabbi Shmuel, Hoyol v'nemru b'godim b'Torah stam. Now we have many places in the Torah where it mentions b'godim, where it mentions clothing. The Torah mentions, for example, that clothing can become tamei from a dead sheret, that clothing can become tamei, from shichvat zera, from a mess, etc., etc. By tisis also, so you have many places where the Torah says beged. So what does it mean? Does it mean any kind of cloth, or is it only a certain kind? Or parat l'char kosov ve'echad mehem semro pishtim, then in one particular place, when it comes to tumas negoyim, when it comes to the tumah of Taras, then you have the Torah specifies that semer pishtim. And there you actually have a klal of schach. Because you have The pasuk starts off, "Va'beged kiyir bo nega saras," a piece of clothing, if there is saras in there. And then it continues, "What kind of beged? Beged semer or the beged tishkin?" A wool garment or a linen garment. So therefore, that's a klal of pras. And as we know, we say in the Brayt of Rabbi Shmuel every morning, klal of pras means ein v'chlal el alash of a pras. It means the klal is limited only to the pras. So therefore, Tanit Rabbi Shmuel was saying that when it comes to saras, we're saying that we have a klal of pras over there, so we're saying that saras applies only to wool and linen garments because of the klal of pras. So therefore, now in turn, we use a binyanah from that. Mala halam, semer of pishtim, I've called semer of pishtim. So just like there, beged is restricted specifically to semer and pishtim, the same way when it comes to other places in the Torah where it talks about a beged becoming tameh, then other kinds of cloth are not included. So according to Tanit Rei Rabbi Shmuel, the word beged in the Torah means strictly wool and linen. So therefore, Rabbi is saying, Rabbi Shimon Elazar takes the same view, that therefore other kinds of cloth are not makabel truma, even in larger sizes. And by the way, Tosfos points out, in that case, he didn't have to mention shloshal shlosh, he didn't have to mention shloshal shlosh, 3x3 etzbos, which would, in fact, Rav Shimon Elazar, according to Abaya's understanding, would say that other kinds of cloth are not makabel truma, even in larger sizes. But the reason is, Tosfos says, because linen is different. Linen is makabel truma with 3x3 etzbos. So therefore, he already mentioned 3x3 etzbos as far as the other ones, but not to say that he would say that actually it would be the kabel truma in larger sizes. Rav Shimon Elazar would hold, according to Abaya's understanding, that any size of cloth other than wool and linen is not makabel truma at all.
Is this why this applies to tzitzis? Then why we need to take wool?
So the question is, does this apply to tzitzis? So the basic question is the halacha like Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel? You actually have a machloikus for showing him about that. I mean, we have a whole sugya over here. We're going to go through part of it today, and we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, but we have a whole sugya over here, what the deal is with Tanit Rei Rabbi Shmuel and Rav Shimon Elazar, and did anybody, and we're also going to have Rava's understanding of them, and we're going to go through a whole sugya over here. But, there is one understanding of it, which is the Rambam's, among others, that, yes, we accept what Tanit Rei Rabbi Shmuel says. We accept his klal prat and his binyan av, that beged in the Torah means only tzemer or pishtim, and therefore only tzemer and pishtim are chayiv and tzitzis on a daraisa level. Everything else would be chayiv only d'rabbanan. You have other rishonim who disagree with that and say that no, in fact, we don't accept necessarily what Tanit Rei Rabbi Shmuel says. And therefore, other kinds of cloth, in fact, we're going to bring now that Rava is going to say that other kinds of cloth are makabel truma as well, just not in the size only 3x3 etzbos. So they say that yes, other kinds of cloth are chayev in tzitzis on a daraisa level as well. So we try to be yotze all the days. Therefore, the best thing is, it says in Shulchan Aruch, the best thing is to wear a talus of wool or linen, and that way you're yotze l'kol ha'alma. And linen, actually, we discussed yesterday that there's other problems with it, because the halacha may be like this shamai that a linen garment is potter from tzitzis, because you would end up putting chelus in it and you'd end up wearing it at night, etc. So therefore, the bottom line is that the proper thing to do, the proper way, the best way to do it is to wear wool tzitzis, which is what we do.
And the reason why Tanit Rei Shmuel says that a beged is either wool or linen
is based on a klal of pras by Sarah, where you have a klal of pras over there, beged, kiyah by negat saras, beged sema, or beged tishkim, and then he uses a binyan av to extend that to everywhere else in the Torah where it says beged.
Hmm.
Okay. Fine. So that's Abaya's understanding, is that Rav Shimon Elazar is saying that no other kind of cloth other than wool and linen is makabel truma. So actually, Rashi says then, when it comes to the din of being makabel truma, Rav Shimon Elazar didn't really have to mention the point about it not being from a tree, because it doesn't matter whether it's from a tree or not. He would say the same thing applies, for example, to, let's say, rabbit wool or camel's wool or whatever, or silk or whatever. But in terms of sukkah, he had to mention things that come from a tree, things that come from a plant, because obviously only plant material is kosher chaskach. Okay. Anyway, so that's a buyer's understanding. Rava Amar, Rava says no. You're saying that Rabbi Shmuel, Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shimon Elazar are saying exactly the same thing. No, Rava says they're not saying exactly the same thing. Shloisha al Shloisha, the Shai Begadim Ikabinayu. There is an argument between them. What about when it comes to three tfachim by three tfachim of other kinds of material? There's an argument between them. Did Rav Shimon Elazar Isle, the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel left side? Rav Shimon Elazar would say that they are Makabal Tumah, so he would say that a piece of cotton cloth, for example, 3x3 tefachim or larger, is Makabal Tumah, because he only mentioned that Shalosh al Shalosh, which is Hatzbai, doesn't apply, but Shalosh al Shalosh would actually be Makabal Tumah, says Rav Shimon Elazar. Whereas Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, who holds that Deged in Torah means only Semer Pishtim, would disagree. So that's what they're saying. You and Baya are saying that they both agree that other cloth is not Makabal Tumah at all. No, Rav Shimon Elazar says that it is Makabal Tumah. You just need a larger size, 3x3 tefachim. And Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel is saying it's not Makabal Tumah at all. By the way, we should point out that, you know, I mean, nowadays we're not following the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara because we don't have the Beis Mikdash, we don't have the Parah Adumah, etc. Nevertheless, there is actually a nafka mina to this whole question of what is Makabal Tumah and what is not. When it comes to the dinim of Ksamim, we learned in Masechta Midah, you have a case where a woman finds a blood stain on her clothing, and the Rabbanim say that she's Tomei because it might be Dam Midah, but you have certain rules in that. One of them being that the stain has to have been found on something which is Makabal Tumah. And in Shulchan Aruch, the Shach over there stresses, it doesn't just mean a material itself, which intrinsically is Makabal Tumah, it has to be that the actual size is Makabal Tumah. Now, as long as it's Makabal some kind of Tumah, then it still applies. So for example, let's say, as the Gemara is going to discuss now, a piece 3x3 etzbos, of wool or linen is Makabal Tumah when it comes to Tumah of Negoyim, but that's enough. So therefore, but in other words, if you had a piece, if she found the kesem on a piece less than 3x3 etzbos, or as we're saying over here, maybe with other kinds of cloth less than 3x3 tefachim, according to Rav Shimon Elazar anyway, then she's not Tumah Mishum kesem. So that's an afkamina that we have from these dinim nowadays. Okay. So the Gemara goes on. In fact, by the way, it's interesting. We have a little bit later on Daf Kotes, we have another sugya on the question of small pieces of cloth, when they're Makabal Tumah and not. And very uncharacteristically, the Rif quotes that whole Gemara in his sefer. Now, usually the Rif only deals with halachas that are applicable nowadays. Usually the Rif leaves out all halachas that have to do with Tumah V'Tahara and the Beis Mikdash and so on and so forth because they're not applicable nowadays in Golos. But he leaves in that later sugya on Daf Chavches that talks about Tumah V'Tahara, of course, maybe because of that. Maybe because it is negeya to the question of if a woman finds a kesem on a piece of cloth. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, continuing the Gemara over here. Okay, the bottom line is that everybody does agree that a piece 3x3 etzbos of wool or of linen can become tamei with taras. So we know them. Where do we know that from? Where do we know that a piece 3x3 etzbos is able to become tamei with taras if it's wool or linen? But the time, we learn in a brisa, beged, now like this, the pasuk starts off, v'habeged kiyya b'negas taras. So if it only said the word beged, ein miel a beged, then you would think it maybe only meant a complete item of clothing. Sholosh al sholosh minayin. How do we know that it also includes a piece that's only 3x3 etzbos? Tamad leimer v'habeged. Therefore, the pasuk doesn't just say beged kiyya b'negas taras, it says v'habeged. The extra vav and hay, and by the way, you have, as you want to mention in some other places, that Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel doesn't hold necessarily of dashing extra vavs, because they say, okay, Dibur Tzera, Koloshim Re'adam, but they do agree that an extra vav and hay, you do dashing. So therefore, you have, because therefore you're dashing, that it means not just a complete item of clothing, but even a piece 3x3 etzbos. So the question is, the Emel Rav is Shloisha al Shloisha. Maybe not. Maybe the V'habeged comes to include a piece 3x3 tefachim, but not necessarily only 3x3 etzbos. The Gemara says you don't need that. lav kavachomer. Who wouldn't it be a kavachomer that you would say that you would say that 3x3 tfachim is matame? Hashta shesti ve'erim matame. Consider the pasuk mentions over there by Sarah that even shesti ve'erim, even unwoven threads, an unwoven spool of thread that is going to be used for shesti thread or eira thread to weave a garment, is already able to become tame with Sarah. Even that, would you need to say it when it comes to a piece 3x3 tfachim, which is a very large piece, which is a piece, as the Gemara is going to say soon, large enough that even a rich person is going to find a use for such a piece of cloth, as opposed to 3x3 exboys, as the Gemara is going to say soon, only poor people would bother keeping such a piece of cloth for a patch. But 3x3 tfachim is already big enough, is already a significant enough size piece of cloth that anybody, even a rich person, will keep it around and use it for something. So therefore, if you're saying that even shefi and erev, which are unwoven threads yet, become tameh, how much more so 3x3 tfachim? So therefore, so you wouldn't need a pasuk to tell you that 3x3 tfachim is tameh. Okay, Tosfos actually points out that really the Gemara is mentioning a kavachomer. You don't even really need a kavachomer per se. I mean, even without kavachomer, because it's already a very suitable piece of cloth for aniyim or for ashirim, then already you don't really need any kind of kavachomer even to say that it would be metame with saras. The Gemara is just mentioning the kavachomer in order to say even if you were to think that way, still based on a kavachomer from Shefi and Erev, definitely you would say that a piece 3x3 tfachim surely has to be makabel tumah.
Why would you say a 3x3 etzbos or 3x3 tfachim is a big edge? You cannot clothe yourself with such a small piece of cloth.
3x3 tfachim, actually you can. You can use it, for example, as a headscarf. But the three, keep in mind how much 3x3 tfachim is. It's about 9 by 9 inches. Think of the size of a standard sheet of paper. It's a little bit smaller than that. So it's already a piece of cloth that's large enough to be used as a baguette, to be used as a makeshift baguette at least. 3x3 S-boys, as the Gemara is going to say soon, is much smaller. An S-boy is less than an inch. So 3x3 S-boys is like two and a half inches or something. So that, a piece like that, the Gemara is going to say soon, only poor people would keep that around. They would use it for a patch for their clothing or something. A rich person wouldn't bother. But a piece 3x3 tfachim is already usable enough, is already large enough to be used for a lot of practical purposes, and therefore, for sure, it would be considered a beged, and that's what the Gemara is saying over here. You have a kavachomer. Even shefi and erev threads on the tame, then how much more so 3x3 tfachim? So you don't need a ribui in the pasuk for it. So we have a ribui in the pasuk from the vav and hey of the word from the vav and hey of the word vav beged, then it must be the ribui is coming with 3x3 etzbos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so the question is, the Gemara asks the Haki Shalosh or Shalosh Nami late to the kavachomer. Okay, then you should be able to use the same kavachomer to say that 3x3 etzbos should be able to become tame. And not need the ribui in the pasuk, right? The answer is no. The Gemara says, "Ela shloishal shloisha the chazu bein la'ashin and bein la'aniyim." The difference is a piece 3x3 tfachim is big enough to be suitable for both rich people and poor people. Therefore, osi b'kavachomer. So that's the kind of thing that we would learn out with that's the kind of thing that we would learn out with a kavachomer, as opposed to shloish al shloish, but 3x3 exboys. That's only suitable for poor people. Rich people wouldn't bother with a piece that size. Therefore, we can't learn it with kavachomer, and we wouldn't know that it's tameh if it weren't. If it weren't for the vav and hay of v'habegin. Tosfos discusses over here that actually the Gemara had thought that maybe when you have Vehav Deged, it would mean any size, whether 3x3 Etzbos, 3x3 Tfachim. The Gemara had asked why not 3x3 tefachim? Because, okay, we say tzemer of pishkin would mean that other, we would say that it means that other kinds of, maybe the maxim thought that maybe what we'd be saying is other kinds of cloth are makabel, tumas negoyim, not like we said before, that only wool and linen, but we would say the miut would come to teach us that with other kinds of cloth, you need 3x3, you need 3x3 tefachim, and only when it comes to wool and linen, would you say 3x3 etzvahs? And we're shooting that down, and we're saying that no, because you don't need a ribui in the pasuk for 3x3 tefachim at all, so it can't be coming to be marbe that, so it must be coming to be saying that the 3x3 etzvahs, and therefore, and again, that would apply only to wool and linen. Other kinds of cloth would not become tome with farah at all. Okay. So the Gemara continues. So that's it. So because 3x3 tefachim is only for aniyim, so we can't learn it with a kavah chomer, and therefore only time at the kasei kara, so only because the pasuk uses the extra vav and hay, only that would we say, therefore, that that's enough to teach us that 3x3 etzvahs is makabel tumah when it comes to wool and linen. But if the pasuk had not written the extra vav and hay, we would not have been able to learn with a kavah chomer that 3x3 etzvahs is makabel tumah, because again, 3x3 etzvahs, unlike shefi and eruv threads, where shefi and eruv threads, anybody poor or rich can use them, when it comes to 3x3 etzvahs, of course, only poor people are going to bother with it. So we wouldn't have been able to use a kavah chomer. So therefore, we need the vav and the hay to teach us that 3x3 of tzemer of pishkin is a kavah chomer. Okay. So the Gemara still asks, the aim of the rabbis, shloisha al shloisha b'shav b'badim. Okay, but still say that maybe it comes to include 3x3 tfachim of other clothing. And again, Tosfos says over here that what it is that when we just gave the answer over here in the Gemara, the one who gave the answer didn't understand. He thought that maybe don't you know that it says tzemer pishtim in the pasuk? And he's clarifying that he's saying that no, that even if it says tzemer pishtim, maybe that's only to exclude 3x3 etzvos, but not 3x3 tefachim of other kinds of clothing. So maybe you would say that. Maybe you would say that 3x3 of 3x3 etzvos, let's say, of tzemer pishtim is makabel tumah. Fine. And then you'd say that the vav and hay of veha beged is coming to include also other kinds of cloth. Fine. It can't be 3x3 etzvos because then the pasuk wouldn't have mentioned tzemer pishtim at all. But maybe it means other kinds of cloth are able to become tumah with saras, but only if there's 3x3 tefachim. Mm-hmm. The answer is Amakura beged tzemer pishtim. No, because the pasuk mentions a cloth of wool or linen, meaning beged tzemer pishtim ein vidyachrin aloi. So it means specifically only those. In fact, you have the klal and you have the prat. You have the klal which said veha beged. You have the prat which says, you have the prat which says tzemer pishtim. So therefore, as usual with klal of prat, it means only tzemer pishtim, nothing else.
Can you read me the pasuk?
The pasuk goes, v'ha beged ki yiyavoy nega tzaras, v'veged tzemer oy b'veged pishtim. If a piece of cloth becomes tame with tzaras among clothes of wool or clothes of linen, so we see, in other words, that actually we see that so it mentions specifically wool and linen, and in fact you have twice in the psukim over there in connection with saras of clothing where it mentions beged semer or beged pishtim or beged semer or pishtim, whatever. So you have twice in the pasuk where it stresses that it means that a beged for this purpose means only semer or pishtim. Therefore, we have no way of including other ones even from the vav and hay of our beged. That's actually the next piece of the Gemara. So the Gemara asks, "Be'eva ki imit mishalosh al shalosh." Okay, but maybe what we're saying is that other kinds of cloth are excluded. That shalosh al shalosh, 3x3 etzvos are not mitame by negoyim. Avol shalosh al shalosh mitame, but 3x3 tefachim would be mitame.
Why is tefach feminine? Tefach doesn't end up with a hay.
in Lashon Kodesh, in Lashon Kodesh, you have that. In Lashon Kodesh, you have the numbers. The gender of the numbers is backwards from what you would expect. Lashon Zachar ends with a hey. Lashon Nekeva does not. So you have, for example, let's say the word Shalosh. The word shloisha, even though it ends with a hey, and usually hey is a marker of the feminine, but shloisha is actually the masculine version of the number. Shalosh, without the hey, is the feminine version. So shalosh, al shalosh, refers to etzba'os, where etzba'os is feminine. Shloisha, al shloisha, refers to tzachim, which is masculine.
That's throughout the Torah.
That's always the case. Even in modern day Hebrew, you have that. There's that difference between Moshe Zachar and Moshe Nekeva, with Shloisha and Arba and so forth are masculine, and Shen Sholosh and Arba and so forth are feminine. Yeah. As a good example of it, you know, next week Pesach we're going to be drinking the Arba Kosos. Kosos, actually, it's interesting. In Tanakh, the word kos is usually the word kos in Tanakh is usually Lashon Nekeva. In the Mishnah, it's often Lashon Zachar, although there are exceptions. So I guess when we call it the Arba Kosos, we're using the Lashon Kos as in Lashon Torah, where the word kos is Lashon Nekeva, and therefore we use it with an Arba rather than Arba. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Although it's a little bit inconsistent because we talk about Kos Rishon and Kos Sheni, et cetera. So yeah, it's a little bit inconsistent. But okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here. So the question is, again, that maybe the miut is, since it says Semer Pishtim, then it means that other kinds of cloth are not Tame from Saras with Sholosh al Sholosh, Abel Shloisha al Shloisha Mitame, but maybe if there's 3x3 Tvachim, they are Mitame. And the answer is Tremi Utik Sibi. The answer is you actually have two mi'utim in the pasuk. Twice the pasuk says beged semer and pishtim. Beged semer over beged pishtim, because you have later on in the pasuk it also mentions beged semer over beged pishtim, and later on it says beged semer over pishtim. So therefore, you have two mi'utim. So therefore, chav lama'utim is shalosh al shalosh, b'chav lama'utim is shloisha al shloisha. So therefore, the one would tell us that other kinds of cloth are not metame when they are not tame from Tzarach when they're only 3x3 etzbois, and the other one says that even when they're 3x3 tzvachim, also not.
That's why it says twice beged.
So that's why it says twice. Yes. So that's why it says twice. So we thought that maybe Sholosh Etzbois by Semer Pishtim, maybe we could still use the Kal V'Chomer over there that we said before. Even though we said the Kal V'Chomer doesn't work so well because it's only suitable for Aniyim. But nevertheless, we would have thought that maybe we could still use the Kal V'Chomer. And therefore, so therefore we're saying that no, you have two miyotim, one to say that it doesn't apply to Sholosh al Sholosh, and one to say when it comes to other garments, and one that it doesn't even apply to Shloisha al Shloisha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So that's that. So we'll continue the discussion tomorrow about the Sham, but that's where we're up to right now, where you have that piece three by three as boys of Semer Pishtim is Mekabel Tuma from Sarah, and we're going to discuss tomorrow whether it's Mekabel Tuma from other kinds of Tuma as well. And then you have, as opposed to other garments, are not Mekabel Tuma of Sarah as well, no matter what the size. And then we'll continue tomorrow with analyzing, with getting back to Abaya and Rava's different understandings of Rav Shimon Elazar, where again, Rav Shimon Elazar had said that a piece 3x3 etzbois of other cloth is not metame, and Abaya said it doesn't just mean 3x3 etzbois, it means any size, no cloth other than woolen linen, according to Rav Shimon Elazar, is mekabel tuma, whereas Rava had said that Rav Shimon Elazar would say that other kinds of cloth or mekabel tuma, but only when they're a larger size, 3x3 tefachim, rather than 3x3 as far.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, Rabbi.
Yeah.
Just a quickie to start making a small plan for Pesach, you know,